For many of us, we can't remember this, and it's hard for us to imagine. You know, but I hear people that are older, and they'll tell me that 50, 60, 70 years ago, it wasn't uncommon for a deal to be done, a business deal, something to be sold, something to be bought, some kind of significant deal to be done simply on a handshake. And the idea that saying, okay, we're going to agree to these are the terms, and again, if somebody had any reputation in the community, if they were known at all, they would say, well, I'm going to commit to this, we'll shake hands, and there was no need for a contract. Now, again, that's almost impossible for us to imagine happening today, because that idea of that level of integrity, of an honesty, is something that's unthinkable. And so something has clearly changed. You know, it used to be that, again, this idea of integrity was so important that you could trust a person so that their word, what they said, was their bond. It was a contract. And so much so that now today we have somebody signed a contract and we're worried that they're going to keep the contract or they're going to try to get in loopholes and somehow try to break that. You see, the problem that we have is that we have a problem in our culture that's dealing with the whole issue of lying and of truthfulness. And it really is something that is a problem. It's not just that people aren't as honest as they once were, but we now have a problem where it's literally that, you know, that we're looking for deception. That's what we've seen as the norm. And so it's not just, again, that we don't have contracts. It's you have a contract and we're worried whether people are going to try to break that, whether they're constantly lying. In some ways, we can say that I think it's really an epidemic. It's not just a problem. It's something that's deeper. It's epidemic. A number of years ago, several scientists did an extensive survey of the morality of America, and they wrote up their findings in a book called The Day America Told the Truth. And one of the things that they found that was really most troubling was some of the ideas that Americans had about lying. And what they found is that nearly all Americans admit to lying. 91% admitted to lying frequently, even on a daily basis, as a way of life. And here's part of their conclusion that they wrote in their book. They say, lying has become an integral part of the American culture, a trait of the American character. We lie and we don't even think about it. We lie for no reason. We lie to everyone, parents, children, clergy, friends, spouses. We lie, cheat, and steal, mostly in small ways, on the job. And we think nothing of it because everyone does it. Or they don't pay me enough anyway. Michael Lewis of the Robert Wood Johnson Medical School did an extensive scientific survey, you know, and said, well, that wasn't scientific. This was a scientific survey. And he concluded that in a single day, most people lie a minimum of 25 times a day. And that's the minimum. Now, you know, we look at that and we say, is that really true? Well, let me put it in maybe more practical terms. A group of people went out and they decided to see what people's opinions on this really were. They did a little on-the-street interview. And again, now listen to this. These are just people that were, you know, chosen by random on the street. And listen to all their answers about lying and how they build on each other and what it's really saying about our view of honesty.
Do you consider yourself to be an honest person?
Not really.
Do you consider yourself to be an honest person?
Yeah, definitely.
I guess I think I'm an honest person.
I try to be. Yes.
Sometimes I can be honest and sometimes I can't. I'm not going to lie to you.
I don't like to lie and I hate people that do lie.
What percentage of the time do you think that you tell the truth?
Ooh. Probably about 80%.
75% of the time.
Probably 95% of the time.
85%.
Probably 95%.
Probably over 95% of the time.
What percentage of the time do you think that you tell the truth?
About 50%.
I'm honest the majority of the time, over 50%.
I'd have to say about 47%.
Do you think there's times that it's okay to tell a lie?
Yeah, when you don't hurt anybody else by telling that lie.
Do you think there are times that it's okay to lie to people?
Yes. Yes, I do.
It all depends on the circumstance, I suppose.
If someone's saying something bad about your friend or whatever, and you might not want to hurt their feelings, especially if you know that they can't handle it, then in that case, yeah, I do think that it's okay to lie to them.
Yes and no. It depends on what it is.
If it helps somebody, then probably, but not all the time.
Don't tell me I'm fat or something. You know, if I ask if I look fat, don't tell me I look fat. Tell me I look skinny or something.
When I was in high school, I told a lot of white lies to my mom and it kept me out of trouble.
How does it make you feel whenever one of your friends tells you a lie?
Deceived and kind of betrayed, stabbed in the back sometimes.
It makes me upset.
I like my friends to be trustworthy.
It hurts. Definitely hurts a lot. And it feels like you can't trust anybody.
You feel betrayed and you just
you feel angry. I feel angry. And it takes a lot for a person to gain trust with me again if I find out they blatantly lied to me.
But then it also helps me to realize the importance of not lying to other people.
When was the last time that you told a lie?
Last night. No, actually, like a few hours ago.
When was the last time that you told a lie?
I don't know. When did we start this interview?
What was that lie?
I can't tell you. It's kind of personal.
Are you lying right now by chance?
I have no idea because I can't tell you every time I've lied, but I'm a pretty good liar as a matter of fact.
And you look at that and you say, that's sad. You know, one of the things that's sad about that, though, is right off the beginning, they asked, you know, do you say that you're an honest person? And all but one person said yes. And then you see how they defined honesty. And that's actually part of the problem, is that we have this epidemic and we don't realize it. The same study that showed that 91% of Americans admit to lying frequently showed that the vast majority of those same people consider themselves, by their own words, extremely honest. And again, you pick that up on the video. You have people that say, well, I'm honest. You know, I tell the truth more than I lie. So if I only lie 45% of the time, well, therefore, I would consider myself honest. And in the middle of that, too, they said, well, you know, well, I'm not bothered by lying. But you turn it around and say, well, how do you feel when someone lies to you? Oh, that really bothers me. You know, that bothers me. I expect people to be honest with me. You see, it's a problem. It's an epidemic problem, but it's one that we have a lot of confusion on. Even with morality of it, of is it right or wrong? You know, see, simply put, while we see most lying as wrong, we don't always see lying as wrong. There's actually sometimes we see it as a good thing. Let me give you maybe a more extreme example of this. This was an article put out by the American Association for the Advancement of Science. And here's what their opinion is about lying. They say proficiency at lying may be the best measure of advancement within the primates, much more adept at it than other animals, and human beings the most masterful deceivers on the planet. So here's what they're saying. From an evolutionary standpoint, see, lying, we don't believe in moral absolutes of right and wrong. God didn't tell us that something is right, wrong, because we evolved. But lying is actually not a problem. It's not a sin. It's actually part of our advancement. It shows that we are actually the most masterful and advanced people on the planet. It's a virtue. And unfortunately, you know, what we have is that's something that's, it's not only science, it's practical. A lot of times we say, well, I lied because they need to hear it. You know, we feel like it's sometimes the right thing to do. And we have little white lies, and we define what those mean. We think that, you know, there's this threshold. If it's a little white lie, it's not crossing the threshold of a lie. And at certain times, you know, because we don't want to hurt someone's feelings or they don't need to hear it, you know, it's actually a virtue. But the problem is that when we think about that, there's no line of defining what makes a lie or not. It's always changing. See, what we have to realize is that when we look at this, we are constantly trying to justify this problem. We have the vast majority of us struggle with lying. It's something that we do all the time. But we don't think of ourselves as being dishonest because we try to justify. We try to somehow say, here's why it's not wrong. Now, here's what I want you to realize we're going to see. Throughout the Sermon on the Mount, we've already seen that Jesus is repeatedly dealing with issues at the heart level. And he shows that when most people, when they talk about moral issues, they go to a religious level. What they do is they focus on the rules. Here's the rules, and here's where the crossing the line is. And so repeatedly, he challenges his listeners, saying, you've heard it said, and then he talks about how they define the rules. And he comes and he says, now I'm going to confront you, but now I say to you. And he speaks to the moral issue, not at the level of the rules, but of the heart. Not of just what we do, but who we are. Now, when we look at these strategies for justifying lying, they all focus on the rules. They're all different forms of this religious, okay, let me take the rule and how do I redefine it, or how do I make it so that I'm really not breaking the rule? Let me give you three. The first is what I'm going to call moralism, and that's focusing on defining the rules for lying. So what we do here is that we try to define the standard in a way that fits, that we're comfortable with. So we're against lying, but let me define it this way. And usually what we do is instead of pulling ourselves up to a higher standard, we dumb the standard down to one we're comfortable with. Usually we stress the letter of the law, and in the process we reject the whole spirit of the law. And so what the moralist will do is they'll stress the importance of not telling a lie. But often then they focus on technically what is a lie. And so, you know, if I can look at that and if I can define it, well, here I really didn't lie, you know, I technically didn't lie. Let me give you an example. I had a friend a number of years ago that told me we're talking about lying, and she was using her mom as this great example of a really honest person. And so she said, yeah, my mom taught me we shouldn't ever lie. So what she said, here's her example. She said, if somebody called my mom and my mom didn't want to talk to them, then it was a lie to say she wasn't home. So I would say, well, who's calling? And they would tell me, and I would say the name, and my mom would hold up a finger, and I knew to wait just for a moment, and she would run out to the garage, stand in the garage, and then I could tell her she's not home right now. Now that's moralism. And what's sad is that this person was telling me this is admiring her mom as an example of wonderful honesty. And you see, the whole idea is, well, no, technically I didn't lie. The words that I used, you know, I chose these really simple, you know, words to technically not tell an untruth. But in the process, where we don't break the letter of the law, we totally destroy the spirit that God has called us to be honest people. See, it's one that we look at that and you say the issue again is the heart. Is that heart of that approach really one of honesty, of integrity? No, it's not. It's moralism that's focusing on defining the rules. See, the second way that we try to justify it is through what I'm going to call relativism. And that's seeing the rules as honesty as being flexible. See, in this view, the moral law against lying isn't really an absolute. It's not something that's always wrong. It's a relevant principle. It's something that is, there's not this clear cut line of here's a lie and here's not. But what you have is you have this murky thing. So you have certain lies. Well, that's really a lie. And then we have white lies. And then we have good lies. And so, you know, it's kind of like, you know, here we have this line. And what we have is, well, we're going to try to get this line. And we're going to try to just set out this line and say, well, here I'm going to try to show this line. And as long as I'm on this side of it, I'm telling the truth. And well, this side, here's where it becomes a lie. But the problem is that there's a few things. Number one is instead of using the Bible as a mirror that convicts me and that changes me by the standard of honesty, of integrity that he calls me to, what I do is I take the Bible and I change the Bible to fit who I am. But more than that, what we're doing is we're constantly moving the line. You know, we're constantly saying, well, I can move it over a little bit here. Well, and because the thing is that it justifies my behavior. I'm sitting there saying, well, in this case, I don't want to tell the truth, so if I could figure out a way to say, well, I'm doing this, I don't want to hurt the feelings, or this really isn't a big lie, it's a little white lie, and I'm moving the line. That's what we saw some in the interview. You know, they asked this question, you know, do you consider yourself an honest person? Everybody says, yes. Well, how do you define honesty? Do you tell the truth? And what they do is they define it in different terms. Well, yeah, I do here, and I tell these little white lines. Or we move the line by defining honesty by percentage. Well, because because I'm more honest than I'm dishonest, because I speak the truth 60% of the time. Well, I'm an honest person, because what I'm doing is that I'm moving the line. You know, it's flexible. The whole idea isn't absolute. But again, the issue is when we say this, what's happening is that we're following the rules. We're focusing on behavior to justify who we are, and we're totally ignoring the heart issue. We're justifying our deceptive heart. The third way we try to justify is what we'll call legalism. And legalism is classifying rules for levels of truth. And that's really the main issue that we see Jesus addressing here in Matthew chapter 5. You know, that's the problem that he is addressing. I think all of these are relevant, but that's the specific one. Look at verse 33. You've heard it said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn. But I say to you, do not make an oath at all, either in heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let what you say simply be yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil. Now here's what happens, is that people in Jesus' day knew the importance of what the Bible taught about keeping oaths. They knew what it talked about, you know, being truthful. So they understood these things. But again, what they tried to do is that they tried to take legalism and they said, okay, let me take that and let's try to make the rules, and so it classified different levels of truth. Now, here's what they understood. They realized that especially if you made an oath in God's name, that was extremely serious. And the Bible is very serious. We're going to see in a moment that it talks us about, you know, if we make an oath in God's name, well, you keep that. Now, what they did is that they made a system, and truthfulness was defined by what you swore by. Well, if you swore in God's name, well, that was the ultimate. You had to keep that no matter what. But then if you swore by something close to God, if you didn't take God's name, well, that was a serious one. And the closer you got to God, the closer, the more serious that vow became. So if it was heaven, well, that's a pretty serious vow because that's right by God. But if it's on earth, that's not that serious. Well, if it's in Jerusalem, that's God's city. So that's more serious. That's somewhere in between. And they had this whole system where they were talking about all these different kinds of vows and what level of accountability we were. And it was these levels of truthfulness. Well, if I say this, I really mean this. I kind of mean this. I don't mean this at all. Now, here's what you have. So you have almost this whole idea of, you know, we can do this at times. It's kind of, you know, it's almost like with kids. My fingers are crossed, so therefore I can break the promise. That's in essence what they're doing. They're saying, well, here's what my fingers are crossed. Here's what this means. And we can do the same thing when times, you know, it's not only crossing fingers. Well, people, and they say, well, I'm going to do that. Well, I didn't promise that I would do it. You know, or if I promise, boy, I'm going to promise, I promise you I'm going to do it. That's serious. And if I'm really serious, boy, I promise on my kid's life. I promise on my life. I promise on my mom's grave. Whatever it would be. And we have all these, I promise on a stack of Bibles. Now that's serious. We do some of the same things. But again, the problem that we have to see is that these focus on rules. And Jesus says, no, the issue is the heart. He calls us to a heart of integrity. Now, when we look at this, the issue is, are there levels of truth? No. Are there something that moves? No. There's an integrity of wholeness. See, even when we look here, the whole thing was that they were trying to look at different levels of truth, different levels of truthfulness. We read the moment ago. Now, some people take that and say, well, what he's saying, you know, when it says, don't take an oath either by heaven or earth, you know, don't swear by anything, simply let your yes be yes, your no be no. Some people have taken that, and they've taken it to mean that what Jesus is teaching is that it's wrong to ever make an oath. It's wrong to make any kind of oath. And so there are some people that would say, you know, if you go into court, you shouldn't make an oath. You shouldn't make any kind of promises. That's not what he's teaching. Let me show you that. When you look at even in the Bible, there are numerous passages in the Bible that specifically call us to take oaths as something that's a good thing. And again, we're going to look at this and say, what is it saying? We looked at last week. Remember, the first rule of interpreting the Bible is Scripture interprets Scripture. If something's unclear, let's look at the rest of the Bible. What does it call us to? So let's look at this. Deuteronomy chapter 10. You're going to see some of the Bible's teaching about vows. And I want you to see that it calls us to take vows. It calls us to take oaths. Deuteronomy 10. You shall fear the Lord your God. You shall serve him and hold him fast to him. And by his name you shall swear. So it's calling us to say that we should do this. Look at Jeremiah. And it shall come to pass, if they will diligently learn the ways of my people, to swear by my name as the Lord lives, even as they taught my people to swear by Baal, then they shall be built up in the midst of my people. He's saying, God will bless you if you make promises in God's name. He wants us to do that. So he calls us to not make vows that are rash, that are significant, but to realize that when we make a vow before God, we keep it. Look at Numbers. If a man vows a vow to the Lord or swears an oath to bind himself by a pledge, he shall not break his word. He shall do accordingly to all that proceeds out of his mouth. So we're called to make vows, but to take it seriously. It's a binding thing with some of what we talked about even last week, if you were here, when we talked about the vow of marriage. It's a very serious thing to make a vow before God. Now, if there's any question about this, what you find is in the Bible, numerous people make vows to God, including Jesus himself, including the Apostle Paul. We're called to do that. See, what the Bible teaches, not that we shouldn't make vows, but that we should be careful in making vows, and when we do make a vow, we should be totally committed to keeping it. So the question is, do we keep the promises that we make? Because every vow, every promise is in a sense of an oath. It's a contract. And it goes back to this whole idea, you know, a handshake, a word is my bond. I should be able to make this promise and you don't need a contract because every promise that I'm making is, in a sense, something that is binding between me and God and that other person. So the question is, do we keep the promises that we make? Will the person believe what we commit to? Now, how about when we make a commitment and it's a bad commitment? If we agree to do something, whether it's verbally or even by contract. See, here's where you think, you go back and you say, as Christians, I think that God has called us to be very careful in making a commitment. But if we make a bad commitment, we're called to keep that commitment, even if it is now to our detriment to keep it. Because it's more important that we hold the integrity of our heart and our character and being an honest person than it is that we save whatever money that we could have if we had done better in making the contract. What we have to learn there is, okay, let me be more careful and slow in keeping that contract. And that's true whether it's verbal or whether it's written. It shouldn't make a difference. See, what he's calling us to is integrity. It's ultimately a call to integrity. Again, look at what Jesus says in Matthew 5. I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the great city of the great king. And do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Now, the whole idea is not take an oath. The whole idea is in verse 37. Let what you say simply be yes or no, for anything more comes from evil. Now, here's what his point is. His point is not do not ever take oaths, don't swear, don't take vows. His point is that we shouldn't need to make vows. His point is that taking a vow for a Christ follower isn't wrong, but it should be unnecessary and superfluous. So in other words, if I sit there and say yes, that should be just as binding to me as if I vowed on a stack of Bibles, or just as binding as if I signed, 100 pages of contract. That everything should be the same weight as a vow. When we give the answer, it should be, don't make a vow, just simply say yes or no, because we should have such a level of integrity that people get to know us that they say, if you say yes, well, that's as good as a contract in my mind. Because we have that level of integrity. Our hand is always on a stack of Bibles. We are always swearing by God. We're always signing our name. Every time that we say something, we're signing our name before God as something that is binding as a contract. So that when we take as a follower of Christ, it's not that if we make and promise, that if we didn't really promise all the way, that there's certain things that we can tell the truth on that we can fudge on. As far as we're concerned, there's no such thing as an oath. And when he says this whole idea of don't swear on heaven or don't swear on this, what he's saying is this: why do we do that? Why is it that I come and I say, well, I promise on my life, I promise on a stack of Bibles? Do you know the only reason why we have to do that? It's because our word isn't reliable. You go back and you say, why is it that 50, 70 years ago, people could say, handshake, word's my bond? Because people's word were reliable and you didn't need more. And what he's saying is that no matter what happens in the culture, as followers of Christ, our word should be so reliable that if I say simply yes, that has the same value as me signing the contract or swearing on a stack of Bibles. That's the integrity that God calls us to. It's something that doesn't move. It's a simple statement of truth. Now, some people would say, well, wait a second. Are there, practical question, are there exceptions to this? Are there limits to truthfulness? Even in the video, they talked about, if somebody asked me if I'm fat, I don't want to, I'm going to say that I'm fat. And, so it's a command always to be truthful. So if your wife comes and says, does this dress make me look fat? Are you truthful? Now, women, if you don't want the answer to the question, don't ask the question. It's just a little plea for men. And, is there such thing as too much honesty? I ran across a humorous story that shared a child's experience with this question. Let me read this. He says, our teacher asked us what our favorite animal was, and I said, fried chicken. She said I wasn't funny, but she couldn't have been right because everyone else in the class laughed. My parents told me always to be truthful and honest, and I am. Fried chicken is my favorite animal. I told my dad what happened, and he said my teacher was probably a member of PETA, and then they love animals too much. I do too, especially chicken and pork and beef. Anyway, my teacher sent me to the principal's office, and I told him what happened, and he laughed too, and then he told me not to do it again. The next day in class, my teacher asked me what my favorite live animal was, and I told her chicken. And she asked me why, and I said, just like the other chicken, and I told her it's because you can make them into fried chicken. She sent me back to the principal's office again. He laughed and he told me not to do it again. I don't understand. My parents taught me to always be honest, but my teacher doesn't like it when I am. Well, today my teacher asked us to tell us what our famous person was and the favorite famous person that we admire the most was, and I told her Colonel Sanders. Guess where I am now? You know, you look at that and you say, is it possible that we can be truthful? There are times that lying is right. Now, here's what we have to realize, is that when we talk about the call to truthfulness, the call to truthfulness does not mean that we always tell everything, not only that is true, but all our thoughts. You see, here's what happens, is that I've talked to a lot of people that will say, well, I'm just brutally honest. You know, I just am committed to honesty. And what happens is that statement, I'm brutally honest, means, well, that gives me an excuse to say all kinds of thoughts that I have. I can say every thought, so I can use my commitment to honesty as a defense for my slander, for critical language, for cutting language, to share anything that I want. And what we have to realize is that God calls us to honesty, but honesty doesn't necessarily mean that we share every thought that we have. A great passage that I think speaks to this is in Ephesians chapter 4. Look what Paul says in Ephesians 4. He calls us to honesty. Therefore, having put away falsehood, let each one speak the truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. Now notice, the call is not just don't lie. It's don't just focus on the legalism of the lying. It's be truthful. Have truthful character. Speak truth to each other. But when we look at this, we have to remember that it's also to be held in accord with what a verse he said a few verses before this. In verse 15, here's what he taught right before this. Rather, speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in every way to him who is the head and to Christ. So we're always to speak the truth, but in a way that is defined by love. Now then we come back and we say, okay, now how do we do that? What does this truth in love look like? Well, then we go back to verse 29, a couple verses later. Look what he says. Let no corrupting talk come out of your mouths, but only such as good for building up as it fits the occasion, that it might give grace to those who hear. Here's what it's saying. Corrupting talk. Corrupting talk means anything that hurts people, that corrupts, that tears other people down. So what I need to realize is that as I share, I may have ideas that I want to share, but if it hurts people, if it cuts people down, if it does any damage to a person, I shouldn't share that. Instead, I'm called to share that which is good for building up. It fits the occasion. That it gives grace. And what that means is that it doesn't mean that I lie, but it means that at the same time, I can't say, well, I'm just a brutally honest person. I'm always going to speak the truth. And therefore, use that to be able to say whatever I'm thinking at that moment and to share the whole truth, even in such a way that oftentimes is critical, that is condemning, that is negative, that's sharing my own thoughts. In fact, I think back, I didn't have this verse on there, but Philippians 4:8, I think, is a great passage. Where in Philippians, it talks about, you know, the things that are good and lovely and honorable and praiseworthy. Think on these things. It doesn't mean that we ignore the other things, but when I'm interacting with people, I'm not going to tell you, here, let me be totally honest and focus on all the bad things. Let me be honest by bringing out the parts that God celebrates. Because therefore, what we're doing is that we're speaking words that are full of grace. So we don't lie, but that we're careful and gracious in the way that we share the truth. So let's even use for an example. I mean, you know, it's a humorous example. We joke about it and we say, you know, if our wives come, you know, does this dress like make me look fat? You know, the wrong answer is, yeah, you look like a whale. I mean, that's a wrong answer. That's a bad answer. And you don't do that. But it doesn't mean that we also lie. What it means is that there's ways to share things that if you have a dress that doesn't look good, there's a way of saying that that's gracious. You know, I think back even with my one daughter. I came home one day and I had a haircut, and I walk in and she starts laughing at me. That wasn't gracious. You know, that wasn't nice. I won't tell you what daughter it was, but there's a reason she's in Spokane. But I'm just kidding about that. You know, but the whole idea is that there's ways to speak the truth that is not gracious. But you could come and you could say, boy, does this look good? And you know, if I ask Andy, does this look good? She said, well, that other one looks a lot better. That's not my favorite on you. There's ways to say, no, it doesn't look that good without barbs, without being hurtful. There's ways to speak the truth and not compromise at all at the integrity of what we say, and doing so in a way that's full of grace. You see, but ultimately what we need in the middle of this question is something not that's saying, okay, what is the rule and how do we say this and when is this a lie and when is this hurtful? Ultimately what we need is we need a transformed heart. Because again, the whole issue that we're seeing throughout the whole Sermon on the Mount is that people are coming and saying, well, where is the rule? What is the law? What defines this? And Jesus says, no, you're focusing on the rule. I'm focusing on the heart issue. See, the issue that God is concerned with is always not just what we do, but who we are. And so here, when we look at this whole issue of honesty, what is he saying? The question isn't whether you've told a lie or not. The question is, are you honest? Is your heart honest? Is your character honest? Are you an honest person? You see, a lying and deceptive character will always result in deceptive speech, even if we try to justify it and clean it up. But if I have a changed character, then I will become a person of integrity that people can trust on. And I will be a person who not only speaks the truth, but because my character has changed, I will do it with grace and love. My heart will be different. You see, again, it's not just that I do sinful actions. If I'm sitting here and if you're convicted and say, man, I've got to really work on my lying, I do a whole lot more, and many of us may admit that. See, God doesn't want us to walk out of here feeling guilty, bloated by where we failed. He wants us to feel that conviction and guilt so that we come to him. And it's not saying, okay, I'm going to try better, I'm going to do better. What we need to realize is that God calls us to admit that we have a heart problem. See, a changed moral life isn't the goal. It's not just, okay, be honest, here's the rules to be honest. That's a byproduct of the goal. But that's not the ultimate goal. That's what religion focuses on. The problem isn't my actions, it's my heart. The ultimate goal is a changed heart, and that only comes through relationship with Jesus Christ. Only when I have this relationship with Jesus, only that changes who I am. See, because a relationship with Jesus, it means that I admit, God, I agree with you, I have a heart problem. My heart and character is deceptive. I ask you to forgive me. I ask you to take it on the cross through Jesus Christ to pay the price for my sin. And Father, to forgive me and to give me righteousness. I ask you to not just change my action, change who I am. That's hard to do because it means that we're admitting the problem is deeper than my action. It's my heart. But my friends, when we do that, when we come before God and we admit that we have this heart level problem, and we realize that it's not just that I need to try harder, but I need to let God change who I am. And I surrender it and I say, well, God, here's my deception. Here's my lies. Here's where I struggle. God, help me to become the person you call me to be. What's amazing is he does. He not only graciously forgives us where we have fallen short, but he, in his grace and forgiveness and what he's done through Jesus Christ, he says, now I've forgiven you and now I'll change you. I'll make you the person that you long to be. And so that we become people who not just say, okay, what are the right rules? But we become people who are characters defined by honesty and integrity, the people whom God has called us to be.